Learning some new technology is a humbling experience, and it's a good reminder that imperfection is a part of life and it should be welcomed and embraced. And here we all are, and it doesn't matter. In the summer of 1964, I had the good fortune to be hired as a psychologist for the Peace Corps Training Center at UWM. The training center staff had a TGIF custom of going to a pub down on Downer Avenue on Friday afternoons for a beer. Our secretary was very curious about the new hire, moi, and asked me, "What is your religion?" "I'm an atheist," I replied. A shocked look came over her face and she blurted out, "Oh, but you're so nice." In college, I had decided that the notion of a divine mind or some supreme being didn't work for me. And I decided I was an atheist rather than an agnostic because it felt like a faith position rather than an uncertainty. And being a young and innocent atheist, I didn't realize that I was putting myself into the category of bad people, atheists, communists, and queers. And of course, back then, I also didn't realize that I was queer, making it 2 out of 3, a really, really bad person. One of the problems of describing oneself as an atheist is that it's a negative, a theist, no theos. It tells people what you don't believe, sort of, not what you do. That leaves the listener free to understand your non-belief in terms of their belief. My mother once asked me, "Don't you think there's anything higher than man?" That question left me speechless, and I've pondered a suitable answer for years. You see, her question comes out of a belief system whose Bible says, "What is man that thou art mindful of him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels." Those metaphors don't work for me, and it seemed to me that her sacred universe and my sacred universe were incommensurable, that they could not speak to each other. Atheists also get asked, "Don't you believe in anything?" Or, "Well, what do you believe?" Now, that kind of question is why creeds get written. It's easy to respond, "I believe in God the Father Almighty and in Jesus Christ, his only Son." When we atheists say that we don't find the idea of a supreme being, a theos, a higher power, useful, we are rejecting a metaphor to which it's easy to connect reverence. So, how can we talk about our experiences of reverence? Our need for a community, this one, in which we can share and honor reverence. I asked Carol and Megan and Laura and Jim to think about this with me. It seems to me that the question, "What do you believe?" is the wrong question. Said at what believers in a deity, a supreme being, might get from their beliefs. Two of those questions seem particularly relevant today. At a spiritual level, what commands your reverence? And why do awful things happen? And when they do, where do you turn for spiritual comfort? As for the first, what commands your reverence? all five of us find our reverence commanded by the magnificence of the cosmos, the natural world, the interconnected web of all existence. Megan wrote, "I feel intimately connected to life, and I find the sacred in everything from trees to rivers to animals. I do think there is a connection between all living things, and I don't think we yet understand how genetics and experience intertwine to create and connect human beings. But I believe it does." Reverence, for me, is really all things natural and how evolution wove all things together in this delicate balance, end quote. Jim wrote, "Gravity and the ensuing life both command my reverence. I consider myself a humanistic religious naturalist with strong Buddhist tendencies." Laura wrote, "The miracle of birth and the cycle of life, humans as well as nature's creatures and elements, command my reverence. Nature is nourishing and amazing. It can be devastatingly powerful, but equally magnificent and beautiful. The wealth of scientific knowledge and the study of the universe commands my reverence. Art is another inspiration and miracle in its many forms, creativity that shines through the human essence into visual, tactile, and sound, music, and taste, good cooking. And second, why do bad things happen?" Megan says, "Why do awful things happen? Laws of nature, plain and simple. Luck of the draw, who they happen to. And as for me, I say, poop comes to pass. More seriously, I would point out that the badness, the awfulness of an event is in the eye of the human beholders. It belongs to our experience, not to the universe. In its immensity, the events which perturb us are neutral in the context of the universe. I am reminded of the words of Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. He said, "Don't ask the world its meaning. The world asks you." I know people are struggling to try and find meaning in the coronavirus tragedy that is afflicting us. There was a piece in the Times op-ed by Russ DeHoot last week, searching for a religious answer of why this is happening. And I think the answer that makes sense to me is that we make the meaning of it in terms of how we are responding to it. This kind of answer avoids the problem of theodicy, or why does God permit suffering? Suffering is ours to endure, to alleviate, to prevent. What comforts us, we godless atheists who walk in the garden alone? Well, the general answer is the garden, the dew on the roses, the gorgeous glistening spider web woven during the night, beauty in nature, in art and music, our critter friends. Megan wrote, "I find that an afternoon in the woods or on the water can reframe things for me. Jim said, I find my spiritual base and solace in nature. Carol finds spiritual comfort in music, especially classical music. She says, nothing is better than listening to Rachmaninoff with dogs on my lap. And as for me, ever since I was a little kid, I have found comfort in the wild places, particularly little creeks or rivers or lakes. And I am comforted by the adage attributed to Sufi poets like Rumi, this too shall pass. And strangely enough, I am comforted by my cosmic insignificance. So what is it that atheists don't believe? Certainly not in the anthropomorphic deity, which according to Karen Armstrong, author of The History of God, is pretty unique to Western Christianity. But it is also true that many Christians, if quizzed, would say that they don't literally believe in a human-like divine being, a big daddy who dispenses favors and punishments. In this month's Touchstones, there's a quote from Reverend Forrest Church, which goes something like this. Tell me about the God you don't believe in, and chances are, I don't either. I think that many, but maybe not all atheists would say they don't believe in a power separate from the natural world, that there does not need to be a creator separate from the creation. And this is not very different from theists whose God is immanent, inherent in being itself. One clear difference is this. Theists find that God words are helpful metaphors. Atheists are saying they don't find those metaphors helpful. So what draws us theists and atheists together into community? It is the glue of our shared values, the conviction that we stand together in our commitment to the worth and dignity of every person, and in our reverence for the interdependent web of all existence. The atheists let the God metaphor be when it occurs in hymns or in readings and sermons, perhaps editing it out mentally. The theists put the God metaphor in mentally where they feel it is needed. All five of us struggle to put what matters to us spiritually, our ultimate concern, into words. And this tells me that our deepest convictions about what really matters, what it all means, are ineffable beyond putting into words. And if that is the case, in spite of our differences concerning whether God metaphors work or don't work to give our ultimate concern expression, I suspect that we, atheists and theists, have far more in common than we might have thought. Blessed be.